everybody. Welcome to Self-Worst. I'm your host, Brad Pearson. We're here tonight with Sue Smith. She's a New York comedian. Sue, I haven't seen you or your work in a couple of years, actually. But last thing I saw you in was probably Minimum Rage at UCB.
Yeah, I'm a comedian. I have done a lot of UCB stuff. After Minimum Rage was a character show about anger and jobs. And then after that, I started doing more stand-up. So yeah, I do stand-up and stuff, and it's fun.
Yeah, I want to circle back around to that show.
Yeah.
And to anger specifically, because I think that's a nice hot topic for me. That's something that I've dealt with a lot in my life.
Are you an angry person?
Oh, real angry.
All right,
I mean, less now, but yeah, that's kind of been my thing.
Yeah.
A while. First, just like I like to kind of just start off with just sort of broad strokes of like where you're from, how you came to New York, how you started in comedy.
Yeah. Like that. So I'm originally from Pennsylvania, from a small, very conservative town, lots of rednecks. I think the population is 9,000 right now.
Your immediate family, rednecks, or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of hunting, fishing, four-wheeling, that sort of thing. But they're great.
Did you partake in any of that, like shooting guns and stuff?
No, I became a vegetarian at 12, so I think that gives you an idea of how I was.
Yeah. I've shot guns, but never at an animal.
No. Oh, no. I've been to a range and shot guns, and it was nice.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, I kind of see the appeal. There's something about the explosion that's kind of
freeing.
I don't know, freeing.
Yeah,
or like orgasmic in some way.
It really is. Yeah. It's good.
Yeah,
it's good. But guns are bad.
No, I'm not super into them.
No, they're bad.
Okay, so then you came into New York directly from Pennsylvania, or did you hop around before that?
No, I went to college here, so I was like kind of super liberal and obstinate right away, and I was like, I'm not looking at any colleges in Pennsylvania. So I only applied to colleges in New York City, and I went to Pace and studied English, and I just kind of never left.
When did you start? Did you start just like right away at UCB?
No, so I studied English in college, and I was really into like school, and then I think I saw a show, but like I also edited the school newspaper, and I knew that I liked The Onion and I wanted to write like funny shit. And then I think I saw a show at UCB after I graduated. And it's around the time that Eating It was really popular at Luna Lounge in the Lower East Side. So it was like a while ago. So I would go and see that like every Monday night, and it was amazing stand-up show. And then after a few years later, I started taking improv classes.
Okay, and can you talk more about Eating It? What was that show? I don't remember what that was.
Eating It was this stand-up show at this place, Luna Lounge, it was like on Orchard Street, and it was hosted by Marc Maron, and it was just like everybody.
Oh, wow. That was like back when he was here.
So yeah.
That was a grip ago.
Like 2005, maybe. And it's like all the New York comics that were here at the time, like Sarah Vowell, Todd Barry, like just a like very New York moment in time that was really cool. It was really bizarre, but or it was really interesting and cool. I learned a lot.
When you was Minimum Rage your first show at UCB, or was it?
Yeah, I did improv for a few years. And then after that, like I had always wanted to do a solo show, and so I'd done like improv classes and improv class shows and that kind of thing. And then I took a class taught by Becky Drysdale that was just for solo shows. And then I did Minimum Rage there. I like out of that class made that show.
And for the listener, can you kind of describe what Minimum Rage was?
Yeah. So like it's a show about low-paying jobs and the anger that accompanies them, and like why you're feeling these things. And it's also like pretty personal. I did like a couple of pieces about my dad passing away and all these things. But yeah.
Yeah, I remember that being kind of the start of the show.
Yeah.
Was your father passed away.
Yeah.
There was a lost era of cocaine and lots of cocaine for a while.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, eventually you kind of mostly got your shit together.
Yeah. It took me a few years. Yeah. I'm like shocked. Like if I had like looked at myself 10 years ago, like where I am now, I'd be like, whoa, that's weird. I think
the reason I think we know each other is because you worked with an old girlfriend of mine at Brooklyn Bowl.
Who's your old girlfriend?
Caroline Shadude.
Oh, Shadude.
Yeah.
Okay.
She was actually on this podcast. She was episode 7.
Oh, she's great.
She's great. She's yeah. crushing it right now. So she's doing fantastic.
Yeah.
So what was kind of the impetus to make your show about odd jobs and anger and
Yeah. Like during the writing process it was very much like in the class, Becky was like, just do the pieces that come to you and then figure out the theme afterwards. So like write it from that outside in, mm-hmm. inside out.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. And then I found like at the end, I had all these pieces and I was putting them together. And that's what I found was the common theme. I was like, oh, I am an angry person. I should put these together.
When did you kind of start to become aware of your anger as like an entity within you?
I think not until I did that show. Like I didn't know that I was an angry person or that I had that until I did that show. And then also like I don't know that I am. I feel like it was cathartic and then I got all the anger out in that show. Like I don't know that I still
wow.
am.
Yeah, I mean, mostly just because of the subject matter of the show and the tone of the show.
Yeah.
It, you know, you came off as a very angry performer at the time, but I think a lot of that was that. And I'd seen you do like, you know, small spots around town. And
yeah.
Like, and it was a yeah, you were a. You are a tense, angry performer. I haven't seen you in a long time, so I'm not sure what it is now, but or if that's shifted, you know, since your show.
But yeah, I think it kind of passed through me. Mm-hmm. Like I had to get that out, and then now I'm just more like, I don't know, kind of sarcastic.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. I really felt like when I stopped doing that show, I stopped being a rageful person.
What were your triggers
for getting angry?
For anger.
Oh wow. Oh, the last. Okay, so I have been feeling angry the last week because there's a super blood moon. Did you know that? Super.
I heard about this.
Yeah,
like a blue moon or a blood moon or something.
Blue blood moon, and it has made me so angry. So usually, and I was angry at work today, and my.
You just get mad at the moon. You just like shake
your
fist at it.
Oh, the moon! No, it was like a somebody was. When my work is second guessed, so mm-hmm. if that kind of thing, if somebody, I always like think that I know better, and I don't like to be told what to do. So I think that's a big.
And that happens a lot in like shitty restaurant jobs.
Yeah, yeah, jobs in general.
Jobs in general.
Yeah.
Do you can I ask do you do comedy full time now, or do you still do like a day job thing?
I'm a writer at a ad agency right now, and then. I like audition and do shows and things like that. So kind of half and half.
Half and half.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause for me, my anger triggers are, I think, being out of control of something,
mm-hmm.
Trains, transportation, cars.
Oh yeah. Like forget it. The L train.
Getting lost or like missing a turn or something. And also, I mean, yeah, getting talked down to is like one of my, like, oh my God, it just,
or like if someone, okay. So the situation I had at work today is that we're working on a pitch deck for this new brand we're working on. And this guy who's older than me and like more senior went into the deck and changed my copy and made it worse. And it's clearly like, and he thinks it's good, but it's very bad. Mm-hmm. And I got so mad and I was like, hey, I don't think that this is necessarily the tone. I've worked with this brand for like a while. And he wrote back, well, this brand is not about snowflakes and unicorns. And I was like, cool, thanks.
Snowflakes and unicorns.
Yeah, he was just very rude. Like,
did he mean that in like a like an alt-right kind of
snowflake-y meant it
way?
In like a trying to be edgy way. He's like, it's not this like happy, like yeah. fun brand. I'm like, you like, okay, whatever. Like, and part
sounds like you dealt with it pretty well though today.
Yeah, like way. Normally I have two modes where I like disengage and be like, okay, shut down. Like, this is not what I care yeah. about. This is not what I want to be doing. But I know that like this particular work is going to look bad on me if yeah. the creative looks bad. So for this, I kind of changed it. I changed it back to my copy.
Nice.
Even though the guy is very senior, I was just like, no.
Yeah. I mean, that's one.
I changed it literally back to exactly what I had. I'm so like obstinate, and I do not like to be told what to do. I just don't.
I don't know. It can be rough because a lot of times, you know what really gets me is when somebody tells me something like that, tells me what to do or talks down to me in some way. And I'm like, fuck, they're right.
Oh, you know, it takes me a while to realize they're right. Yeah. Like yeah. I think I'm right for like maybe a couple of days and I'm like, oh,
yeah, I worked at this cafe for a while and I would run it kind of by myself. And so I'd be handling like the, you know, register the transactions. And then I'd go back and like, you know, make the bagel or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I took this lady's money and like put it in the register and then like went back to make the sandwich. And she like leaned over the counter and was like, hey, you should wash your hands after you handle the money.
No.
And like, I was just like, okay, yes, sure. And, you know, I was like, yeah, she's technically right. But also like, what the fuck does she think this is? Like,
yeah.
I mean, have you ever eaten anywhere in New York? Like,
yeah.
It's just filth constantly. If you've ever gotten like a bagel at like a street cart or like a street meat situation, like here, I mean,
come yeah. on. Yeah. I just don't like being told what to do
yeah.
at all, ever by anybody. Unless, like, if the way to make me do something is to make me think it was my idea. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, that's great. I don't like being told what to do. I don't like being, like, my work used to be very independent. And mm-hmm. I could do whatever I want. I could come and go as I please. And that's ideal for me. Whenever, the second someone starts, like, questioning me and watching me and, like, getting on my ass, like, oh, it makes me so mad.
Yeah.
So mad. I can't.
What have you learned over the years to kind of deal with that? Do you?
Yeah, there's this
therapy,
like.
Therapy, meditation, any of that?
Yeah, I do all that. But the thing that's helped me the most is there's like, I'm in recovery, so I'm sober. And there's this passage in one of our, like in our literature that's about acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. So, it's kind of like a long reading, but like that's the gist of it. It's like if you're mad at something, you can either accept it or change it. And those are like your only options. Mm-hmm. Like accept it for what it is or try to change the situation. Like that's
accept the situation or accept your anger.
Accept the situation
yeah.
or try to change or accept it or realize whether or not you can change it.
Yeah.
Like accept or change. Those are the only options. And that kind of like funneled down my anger. I'm like, And I would like try to be more accepting, and that kind of helped me be not so rageful all the time. But the L train is like
the L train is just a monster.
Have
you ever screamed at the train?
I yesterday was walking around and I was like, I really would love a place to scream right now.
Wow.
But not in public.
No. Not in public.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Dang. It's so
because I've been that guy.
Really?
Just like missed the train by a hair and just fuck.
I've never done that, but I will be like the person who talks loudly or like
yeah.
I got on the train. It was this was yesterday. It was too crowded. And this girl's like, these people are shoving on at Bedford Avenue and they're rich and it's like, and there's no room. Yeah. And I'm like Jesus Christ. And right. then everyone looks at me like I'm a crazy person. What? But like, don't be an asshole.
Yeah.
But then someone did it to me last week. I was shoving on and she was like, excuse you. And I was like, you're right.
Yeah, see, she was right.
She was right.
Oh, it's the worst.
Yeah.
It's the worst when they're right.
It sucks.
With being an artist who taps into your, you know, your more emotional side for your work, what has been kind of your relationship with, I don't know, just like your feelings in general? In your Sue Costello interview, you yeah. talked about how you kind of thought that you cared too much about your performance or your and or your or the audience's acceptance of you.
Yeah, I still get like anxious, but stand-up has, you have so much more control than like improv or anything. So I just try to like make sure that I'm doing the best that I can and like make sure that my material's super polished mm-hmm. so that I feel good about my stuff. I've gotten like, I used to be just very sensitive and like cared so much about everything and what people thought of me. And now I have like a more of a like, fuck you. Like mm-hmm. I care a lot less because it's, I try to make, I've found that the only gauge as an artist of like whether or not you're doing your a good job is your internal gauge because audiences can be so fickle. And I don't know how. I think it's just like doing it.
It's just doing it. It's just yeah. like the
trial
more
by fire.
It, the,
yeah.
You know, kind of the harder you get.
The more that you beat yourself up and like put yourself in front of audiences that don't like you and feel bad and like the mm-hmm. better you get. It's great.
Do you want to talk about like bombing versus doing well?
Yeah.
And what the kind of emotional impact of that can be?
Oh my God. Bombing is soul crushing mm-hmm. and it doesn't happen too often for me. I noticed that like the way I arrange my jokes affects audience perception. So like sometimes I'll be like, fuck it. I'm going to start out with a material about how much I hate men. And then mm-hmm. the audience will be like, no.
Right.
And then the audience does not like me. So, and that feels bad. And that feels like soul crushing. Like, why do I do this? What am I doing with my life? Like, that's always like the loop I come back to. It was like, what am I doing with my life? I'm never going to be successful.
Yeah.
Like, that's the constant loop. But then doing well is like the highest high. It's the highest high and lowest lows. I've never mm-hmm. done heroin, but I imagine maybe it's similar.
Right.
I don't know. It's very high. Like, it's very like, I'm on top of the world. I will do anything. But then that's fleeting too. Everything passes, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's as I've gotten older. I don't know, kind of the discovery I've made with, just feelings and states of mind and emotion in general.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was talking to my therapist this morning and was just like, yeah, I mean, I've had a pretty good attitude this week and you know, I feel like I'm in a good headspace because I was reporting everything in. It was like, yeah, podcast is going well. Relationship's going well. Like, pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah.
That could all change this afternoon, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I'm fully cogent of that. And I think the more times you go around that emotional cycle, you start to realize that even like the like apocalyptic feelings are not really that. And
mm-hmm.
It's like a mix between being wizened and being sort of jaded and understanding like, oh, if I have this or that feeling, then like whatever, it'll pass.
Well,
who cares?
That's the thing, is like I thought that negative feelings were forever and I was like so afraid to feel them that I would like do whatever to not feel my feelings. But then when I had, like, I was successful, like I was on a TV show and like and I felt great, that passes too. So like the good stuff passes and the bad stuff passes.
Yeah.
So I've realized that like I can't hang my emotional hat on exterior external things, like really need to know how to be okay no matter what.
Right.
And it's hard.
Everybody I've talked to who's gotten sober has kind of the story of what it was they were, you know, dealing with outside of, you know, because the drugs are just sort of
symptom.
A symptom.
Yeah.
But there's something else under that. And then that comes up and then you don't even have drugs to help you through it. So what was that like?
I mean, I always feel uncomfortable in my skin and it's the level, like, I believe that sobriety is like something you have to consistently work at. And mm-hmm. like your emotional health is like what you do in that day for your sobriety. So like if I'm not doing what I should be doing, that comes back where like I'll go into a room and I don't want to talk to anybody and I feel so awkward and like I just want to get out of my skin. Or sometimes after shows, I will hide from everybody else so I don't have to talk to the comics, the yeah. other comics, or talk to people because they just feel so uncomfortable in my skin. Yeah. So I think that's why I was drinking and doing drugs, because as a kid, I always felt like that. I always felt like I was such a piece of shit, but everybody was looking at me. So it's like a piece of shit at the center of the universe.
Sounds like a big like social anxiety.
Yeah, I think it's a social anxiety or like just general anxiety, feeling like I don't fit in or feeling like an outsider. Or just
right.
It's like paralyzing. It's not even like something that's going through my head. It's just like I'll get into a big social situation and be like, I just can't talk to people. Yeah. I just physically can't.
Yeah.
And then when I'm like going to meetings or like I'm having like good emotional conversations and doing my part in that health, then it's better. And I'm a normal person, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you have to sit in the feelings, and not get away from them, which is super unpleasant.
Yeah. My husband bless his soul. Yeah. I never like, I just don't like, ideally I want to be like alone all the time. And he's a very social person. And sometimes I went to a wedding in the fall and I was there for like an hour at the reception and I was like, I just can't be here. I have to go. And yeah. he was mad, but like he understood, you know, like
yeah.
some things are harder than others for me, but it's not a hard and fast rule. You know, I don't know.
I mean, so what would be your advice to somebody who, you know, has a loved one who's dealing with, I don't know, depression, anxiety, sobriety, any of that stuff?
I think what I like about like 12-step programs is that they provide solutions and they provide like, I was in therapy since I was like in middle school, and it's just, talking is just talking. It's not like giving you solutions to fix that mindset. You know, right. like I've heard that CBT does that, but like I've tried to find CBT that like will change your thought patterns and it just doesn't, or like I haven't encountered it. But I definitely think 12-step programs give you the tools yeah. to change your mindset. And there is a 12-step program for everything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's free.
Yeah, I'm not a sober person myself, but I am close with a lot of people who have and who have become sober.
Yeah.
And you know, they swear by it like across the board. And I don't know if you're familiar with a podcast, The Mental Illness Happy Hour.
Oh yeah.
He goes into that a lot, mm-hmm. and he's. That podcast is kind of one of the main inspirations for this mm-hmm. show, because just the spirit of, honesty about mm-hmm. you know what's going on and the universality of of just suffering.
Suffering experiences.
It's a human experience.
Yeah, it's not like. I think that's one thing I learned when I first got sober is like, oh, all this shit that I feel like is weird. Is like not unique, and someone else has felt all of
right.
this all the time. And that's kind of like what I approach my comedy from, this like place of like, oh, we've all dealt with this. We're all on the same page here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, when you're the most in your ego, that's when you separate yourself from others the most. That's when you want to make yourself either better than or less than other people. And when you're at your most healthy is when you are okay with being one among many.
Yeah. Just like, I mean, our literature says like a friend among friends or a worker among workers. But the kind of gut check that I do for my sobriety is like alone, the victim, and right. And if I want to be those things, like too much of any of those things, like if I want to be alone, if I feel like I'm the victim, I'm going through all this shit, or if I feel like I'm right and everyone else is wrong, that's probably like not real. It's probably like not mentally, not where my sobriety is at. Or like I'm living in my disease.
Right. I find the thing about finding acceptance and being one among many is like kind of the hardest thing for me to grasp in terms of just staying mentally healthy. Just because I have a huge fear of mediocrity.
Yeah.
I think a lot of artists do. I think that's one of our main, you know, why we want to stand out so much, why we want to put our work forward, why we want to get on stage, you know, why we're both holding microphones in our hands.
Yeah.
There's something that we think is special or unique about us. But then when we think about how universal our experience is, it crushes that.
Sometimes I wonder if I've gotten too okay with that. Like, when I would get frustrated about like not about where I was, or like if I had a restaurant job or something, I would just be like, okay, like, let me just like be a worker among workers. Let me just be a whatever. Let me just go in and be a worker among workers. And sometimes I think I've like mind fucked myself, like out of like having that ego and being that, like, maybe I need more of that. You know what I mean? Like, I'll be like, oh, well, I'm not competitive with this other performer because, like, we're both different people and we do different things. And my comedy is, like, unique to me and she's unique to her.
Right.
So that's why I'm not. But, like, maybe I should be more competitive. Like, maybe when I go in an audition, I should be, like, I'm always just like, eh, whatever. If they like me, they like me. If I'm the right fit, I'm the right fit. But maybe I should just be like, no, bitches, you're hiring me for this job. You know?
Right.
And I'm not like that.
No, I'm not like that either, and which is why I think that's maybe stunted my success in a lot of ways.
Yeah, same.
Because I'm not a competitive person, and I'm not a very like prideful or avaricious person either. And so Buddy's walking over the cords right now. And so, like, I've talked about this on the show before, but I think creative energy levels kind of fluctuate with, they can go down for two reasons. Like, it can be because I'm depressed.
Yeah.
And because all I want to do when I get home at the end of the day, especially like this time of year when like the sun's going down, is like, I just like want to like smoke a bowl, watch Adventure Time, like, and do nothing and just like eat a whole pizza and like, and just disappear to the world at like 6 p.m.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm less productive just because I'm just happy and enjoying life and I don't feel like I have to prove anything.
Yeah.
And I'm not forcing any work out of myself.
Sometimes I think I'm just so worn out. Like, I think about like how hard I worked for my stand-up even like 3 years ago, and like how much I would hustle and go to different shows and mics and all this shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, like the energy that takes.
It's fucking exhausting just getting there.
Yeah.
After work, and then you have to go up to fucking Midtown to like get a spot.
And then
like,
it's awful. For some open mic. And so crushing, and no one's going to laugh. It sucks, so it's like, and what's nobody else is there.
Like, I really don't know how people do it. Yeah. I did it for a while, like on and off, like going to open mics and stuff, but I just could never. I think the return on investment never came through for me.
Yeah.
Probably because I never got funny enough to actually like get that first laugh that people talk about where they're like, oh yeah, I got my first laugh and like I was forever changed after that. I guess that just never happened.
I don't know what it was that I kept going.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it has to come from people who, it doesn't occur to them to not do it, I think.
Yeah.
It's just a thing that they do.
Yeah.
And you either are that or you're not.
Yeah. I think once I got back into, like, once I had a job that was more creative, I was like, oh, I don't need to, like, go be treated like shit at an open mic anymore. You know what I mean? Or, like, once I had other areas of my life that were a little bit more fulfilling, I didn't kind of need that anymore. I still love to perform, but I'm not going to, like... I just also don't like being in shitty bars at, like, 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah, especially if you don't drink.
Yeah, like, no, it's skeevy.
That's just... Oh, no, buddy.
Oh, buddy.
He's trying to climb up. He's going to get hair all over your coat. Just...
Oh, that's okay. Just for warning. I got two cats.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, if you're just, like, hanging around bars all the time,
Well, there's a, like, not to keep bringing it back to program stuff, but there's a saying, if you hang out in a barber shop, you're gonna get a haircut.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would tell myself it was, like, work and that I had to be there, but then I was like, no, I don't want to be around this.
For you, how tempting is the prospect of, like, relapse?
Sometimes it's been almost 11 years for me, so sometimes I'll be like, it's so far from who I am now.
Yeah.
That I'll be like, oh, I was just like so young that maybe I've outgrown it or something.
Right.
So I think about it, like I think about smoking weed a lot because of my anxiety.
Yeah.
But I don't. It's not something...
Weed can be a real double-edged sword with anxiety, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's sort of what I've found.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just what I needed. And for a long time, I stopped for years just because it was giving me panic attacks.
Really?
Like, every time I smoked. And then I just went away from it and then came back to it after like, a couple years absence and was just like, oh, this works now all of a sudden. I don't know. I don't know if it was, like... just getting older or brain chemistry changing or what, but
I don't obsess about drugs and alcohol on a daily basis, but sometimes it occurs to me like, oh, it would be nice to smoke some weed and chill out right now.
Yeah.
Or like my husband always has edibles and I'm like, oh, that'd be so nice. Like who knows really? But then I know that it's like a downward spiral and like I'm super obsessive and it's not just like one edible or whatever.
Being in a couple where one person is sober and one person isn't.
Yeah.
I know that that's fairly common. But like, what is that like? Is that like is that an issue?
Sometimes when I was single, I was like, I only want to date sober people.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that like, oh no, sober people are nuts. So like I dated a few and I'm like, whoa. It's like really intense. So when I met my husband, he just seemed more emotionally healthy and more normal emotionally. And I was like, oh, this drugs and alcohol thing is kind of like another issue or like a non-issue. Like it's not the priority. Like I want someone who's going to treat me well and is emotionally healthy and can give to the relationship and all this stuff. That said, like, I'm sure like, I don't hang out with him enough.
Yeah.
Like sometimes it's hard. Sometimes like I've had to prepare myself for like situations and like learn how to hang out with all of our friends together who like are smoking weed or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think we're getting to the age where no one is like doing beer bongs anymore.
Yeah.
So.
No, I mean, that's sort of behind us.
It's not hopefully a huge thing. Yeah. And if I always know when it's my time to get out of place. It's when people start repeating themselves. I'm like, bye.
Oh, yeah. I like ask the same question twice or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it happens.
That's my...
Let's talk about jobs for a while.
Oh, my God.
Because I think we might have a pretty a healthy competition of like who's had like the most
shittier jobs.
Like, shitty jobs.
Yeah.
What are like rattle off a couple of the worst ones.
I worked in a bakery calling, doing phone sales for cookies at Christmas time. I worked in a skateboard shop.
Can you skate?
No. I've babysat a million shitty kids. A million. I've been, what else? Oh, I've waited tables at numerous horrible restaurants. Numerous. One restaurant that I was at for like 3 years, literally one morning I went in to put on my like clogs, my waitress shoes, and yeah. I dumped dead cockroaches out of the shoes.
Wow. Yes, plural.
Yeah. It was like just like turning over, there's some dead cockroaches. That was pretty bad. And then the owner came in on Thanksgiving. Like, we were open on Thanksgiving. He came in. He was the only person that came in with like two other people, and he tipped $10 on Thanksgiving. It was awful. Just a lot of shit like that. So bad.
When you have a day job like that, do you prefer something that's mentally engaging or something that's more just like dishwashing, physically engaging?
I have to have mentally, because like even this restaurant that I was at for like 3 years, all of the possible scenarios had happened, and it was just so boring to me. And I was so like angry and frustrated all the time because there was no mental stimulation at all, you know?
Yeah.
So I prefer something that's like more challenging mentally, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. I think restaurant work is just something that I can't do anymore. Like I up until like last year worked at a cafe.
Yeah.
Part-time. I would like open a couple mornings. And I think it was right around the time of like the dirty money exchange with the customer. It was just like, you know what? I can't do this.
What was was that your breaking point?
That might have been, they was around there.
Yeah.
But I think what it really was, it was just this small cafe up in like East Williamsburg. Mm-hmm. And there was the owner, there was me, and there was one other guy who worked there. And this other guy was friends with this weird ass dude who's kind of this like, he sort of reminded me of Tommy Wiseau.
Mm-hmm.
Just this like weird, creepy guy with like long hair. And he'd always come in and he would order a latte, but with one shot, just one shot, but he wanted a tall, and he wanted the milk like insanely hot, like to the point where it was curdled. And it was just gross. It was just, like, every time I made it, I was just like, it's just like hot milk.
Yeah.
He's just this full grown man drinking hot milk.
That's gross.
And then at some point he got into like a disagreement with this other worker. They were like friends, you know, outside of work or whatever. And he came in, threw a hot coffee at him and threatened him, you know, just like physically, like, I'm going to break your bones, all this stuff, like there at the coffee shop. And the owner's reaction was to just say like, okay, well, you know, be really nice to him, 'cause we don't know if he's going to fly off the handle or anything. I was like, dude, you have to ban him. Mm. You have to, he cannot keep coming in. And he wouldn't do it because he thought that he was going to do something worse or something. He was just scared of him. And I was like, yeah, I'm making minimum wage. This isn't worth it.
Yeah.
And I was like coming way out of my way to, you know, to go there at like 7 a.m. and like, nah, I was done.
Yeah. Mine was, so Cafe Jutan in Soho, I will name names. We had to wear these dresses, these uniforms, and they're sleeveless dresses. And when it was daylight savings time, you could wear leggings and a sweater over, like leggings under your dress and a sweater over your dress. And then when daylight savings time ended, like in the spring, you couldn't wear leggings and you couldn't wear a sweater.
Right.
So it was like in May and it was 50 degrees out, and I put a sweater on, and my manager told me to take it off and like I was working outside, I was working the tables outside, and I was just freezing, and I was like, I'm fucking 30 years old.
Yeah.
I'm like gonna wear a sweater if I want to wear a sweater. Yeah. And she was like, either you take off your sweater or you leave. And I was like, I'm gonna fucking leave. So I left, and that was it. But that was after like so many, just beaten down so much, like so much bullshit, that like a creepy owner, like, yeah. But for some reason I was just like, no more.
How many times have you been fired?
Oh my God, so many. Like, I think I like have blocked it out in restaurant jobs.
Yeah.
Like maybe four or five.
Four or five. I think I can recount six times being fired.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I'm not nice and I'm uncoordinated.
Yeah.
So that's not great for restaurants.
I think usually with me, it's because I'm kind of daydreamy.
Yeah.
And just sort of absent-minded, and I like just sort of space things. I think the most humiliating one for me was I got fired from Jimmy John's.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which was, that was after I'd graduated college.
Yeah.
And it was in like 2009. And it was like right in the recession. I was still in Minnesota at the time. And like Jimmy John's was like the only job that I could get. And I was like, I have to pay rent. I have to do something.
Yeah.
You know, like, because this was long enough after I'd gotten out of school that my student loans repayment was starting to kick in. And I had just done, like, I had, like, just gotten out of school, and my senior year and my thesis film had gone really well. And then I'd, like, traveled after that and had, like, kind of, like, a minute of optimism, and then, like, came back and was just like, oh, this is going to be extremely hard. And then I got fired from Jimmy John's because I was a delivery driver, and I wasn't running to and from my car. They wanted you to take the sandwich, run to your car. And I was like, I'm not gonna do that.
No.
Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm going to walk to my car, and I'm going to drive the speed limit. And I'm not going to make this like performative, like show hustle thing.
How did they know
that I was just walking?
Yeah.
Well, cause it was in the restaurant, like in the, like I would take the bag of food, right?
Yeah.
And just like walk to my car, and they would like, they had told me a couple of times, like, hey, run, you know, go now, go to, you know, I was just like, dude, I'll get there. Like, what do you want? Like, you want me to slip on the ice out there? You want me to like shove a customer out of the way? You want me to kick the door open? Like, it's, come on.
Like that situation and then my situation are these like things of like, no, I'm like a grown ass person and
yeah,
you can't treat me like this. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was a real blow. I was only, I don't know, I was like 25 or something. But it was just that feeling of like, wow, I can't even hold down a job at Jimmy John's.
College is such a mind fuck. I heard these two ladies on the train today talking about, like, one was talking about her daughter going to look at colleges, and I like was like remembering how like this high of like, oh my God, I'm going to college and like my future is going to be all set. And then you graduate and you're like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah,
you know, like what was all this preparation for? Just like this? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we're the generation that's slowly starting to realize that college is a gigantic sham.
It's such a scam, dude. Like, it's crazy.
It's like the biggest fucking racket.
It really is. Like, really is. As someone who has taught classes before,
yeah,
I can tell you that it's,
I mean, that's like
scam.
I, you know, in my like postgraduate panic for a while was thinking like, I mean, I'd like education, I'd be a good teacher, and I still genuinely think I would, but I think I have just deep down too much of a like I don't know if it's just resentment or just like a moral kind of aversion to working for a college, just because I don't know how I would, especially if it would be at like a private art school like I went to, I don't know how I would just tell everybody like, look, if your mom and dad aren't paying for this 100%, you should leave right now.
Right.
And go do something. Like, go, like, intern on a film set. Just, like, get coffee or something. You're going to learn way more there. And you're not going to be 80 grand in debt. Don't do this.
Yeah. I think I taught at a rich kid's school, so I didn't feel, like, any qualms about it. I was like, whatever, your parents are paying, who cares? But I think if I taught at, like, a public school or something like that, I would.
Where did,
like,
you teach?
I taught at New York Film Academy.
I did that, too.
Did you really? What did you teach? Yeah,
like, the high school thing over the summer.
And it's all rich kids.
It's all rich-ass, rich like, kids.
Like, rich.
And it's in the FIDI, too.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, it was literally across the street from Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
And, like, we were out on a shoot once, and one of the kids, like, pointed up at the building. He's like, yeah, my dad works there. And I was like, oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Punk.
Yeah. Rich kids from around the world, too. Like, the world's
from
rich.
From everywhere.
Yeah.
That was one of my first New York jobs, I think, was I did a couple of summers teaching the film program.
That high school program was really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard. I mean, I was teaching improv to, like, high school kids, and that's when you're, like, you're most awkward and, like, don't want to, like, be vulnerable. So it was really hard to teach.
It's so painful to watch. It's like, you know, I'm trying to think. In like, probably high school, I took improv classes, and just remember thinking even then, like, if I hear one more, like, SNL voice, if I hear, like, one more, like, church lady or whatever, they're, like, it's Pat. Like, like, you're just aping characters that already exist. You can't do that.
Yeah.
And, like, oh, man, it would just kill me.
I did improv. I forgot I did improv in high school too. I took classes and I, like, was shy, which you can't be in improv.
No.
I don't know, but I still took them. I still liked to be there, even though I didn't really do it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a weird place to be if you're somebody who, because it sounds like you do really like the, I don't know, just the process of performance.
Yeah.
You like that a lot. But you're not a especially extroverted person.
I'm really not.
And so that's kind of a rare balance, I think, that some people have. I remember in college 1.0, I went to the University of Nebraska for like a year. Before I went to this school in Minnesota, and I took a couple of theater classes there, and I was a theater major, and I remember just, like, sitting in class, and we spent an entire class period just people just talking, and the teacher didn't say a word, and I was like, what are we doing? Like, everybody was just talking to hear themselves talk.
Yo, it is so hard for me to be around other actors and to be around other improvisers and other comedians. Sometimes I just have to leave. Like, I can't. I get so, like, I was at an audition yesterday, and it's like, this guy walked in that I see all the time who's had, like, a little bit of success, and he'll be like, he's so fucking fake. I, like, just, I can't deal with it. I read this article, like, a while ago that is, like, extra sensitive people are, like, very aware of people who aren't genuine, and like, that's what it is. Whenever someone, like, isn't really being themselves, I'm, like, super uncomfortable. I don't trust them. I don't know how to act, and it just makes me be like, I don't know, like, it's like I gotta get out of here.
Feel like you're especially good at, like, reading people?
No. I'm not. I can get, like, vibes, but I'm not good at, like, body language. I definitely get vibes, but, like, not little things. And here's how I know. What was I watching? Oh, I've been watching Intervention. I was watching Intervention, and the interventionist was talking to a mom separately, and he was like, yeah, she was giving me a lot of weird signals. She did this, this, and this. And I was like, I didn't see any of that. Like, I'm really bad at reading body language, but vibes for sure.
That might have just been bad editing, though. They might have just cut around the...
No, I saw that she, like, was weird, but he was like saying how shady that she was being. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't pick up on it. He was like, yeah, she's definitely lying about the abuse and all this stuff. And I just didn't see it. I don't know. Hmm. Maybe I'm okay. I don't know. I just don't think so.
Misophonia? Do you have misophonia?
Yes. When
people chew or whatever.
No, for me, it's like singing and guitars and it's like music-oriented.
Music-oriented. Yeah. Just when, like in what context? Like if somebody's busking or?
No, it's like people close to me. Like when I was a kid and my mom would sing, it would just like, and now when my husband sings or he gets out his guitar, I'm just like, stop it.
Oh, no.
Or sometimes when two things are playing at once, like if it's like a TV and a video on an iPhone, I'm just like,
yeah,
I hate it so much. Yeah. Or if I'm driving and something's really loud and I'm stressed out.
Yeah.
I don't know if everyone's like that though.
No, I don't think so. Cause I've known that like I have that kind of like sensitivity before I knew that it had a name.
Yeah.
And I knew that it was like something that runs in our family. Cause my mom, like anytime something would like, she was driving and like the keys were like clicking against the steering column or whatever, or if there was static on the radio or things like that, she would just start freaking out. And with me, it's chewing.
It's mostly
chewing.
Like mouth noises?
Mouth noises, particularly like just like if somebody's chewing and they like part their lips even for like a second, they don't have to be like...
Yeah.
Like smacking like a horse or something, but like if they just like just the slightest lip parts are just like,
I've heard that a lot.
It's been a challenge that like a relationship.
Yeah. For me it's like singing. Like da.
Just any tone of singing or
I don't know. Maybe it's, I don't know. There's something like especially unnerving about like a white guy and a guitar and an acoustic guitar that just fills me with rage.
Yeah, it's just too Dave Matthews-y.
I am just like, it's too much. No, it's too much. Yeah, maybe it's too Dave Matthews-y. I don't know what it is.
Is it like, because I found one thing that always makes me super uncomfortable is if somebody is singing and I get the impression that they're not just going to like sing like half a bar and drop it.
Yeah.
They're going to like commit and I don't know where, like if I should be looking at them or if they're looking at me and singing. This has only happened a couple of times. If somebody's like, you know, theater people, they'll like sing at you.
Yeah.
And it's so uncomfortable.
You know what it is? It's like the emotional vulnerability. Yeah. If someone's singing like a really emotional song, it just makes me like, it makes me so uncomfortable. I can't. Or sometimes if like, yeah, like... In college, poetry slams were a big thing. It made me so uncomfortable.
I mean, I don't think those are comfortable for anybody.
I know, right?
Slam poetry. Yeah.
So bad.
Have you ever done slam poetry?
No.
That was never part of your...
I've thought about it like a lot. Yeah. I think I wanted to, but I never could bring myself to.
That's probably for the best. I think I did a slam
poem. Did you? In like good for high you. School. Good for you.
It was like, I went to an arts high school, so there was a lot of experimentation.
In Minnesota?
No, in Nebraska.
In Nebraska.
Yeah.
Got it.
Let's see. We're doing pretty good on time. How you feel?
Good.
You want to keep going?
Sure.
Okay. Imposter syndrome.
Yes.
Yes. That's your answer.
Yes.
Imposter syndrome question mark. Yes.
Yes. I used to have it a lot more. Like there's this, I think when you're in these shitty jobs and then you get transported into like a regular day job, you're like, oh, I can't do this, or I don't know how to do this. Or like anytime you're in a new situation, you think that they're going to find out, or like they're all going to find out. I've been in those where I'm like, oh no, I just have to like overcompensate before they all find out.
Yeah.
But now I think I kind of realize maybe that I'm older that like everything is perception and like no one, I don't know if I like pitching ideas in a room. Like if I act like my idea is the best, it's going to be the best and people are going to like it. You know what
I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I heard fake it till you make it. And that was like a big,
yeah. When I was on a UCB digital team, like we just did videos and shit and we'd have to like, we'd have to pitch our ideas, and I always sometimes found that I felt like mine weren't received, and then there were guys in the room who would say like a similar idea, and people were like, yeah, 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 I love it. And right. it made me so mad. But then I realized it's because I felt like such a fraud for being on the team in the first place, or like,
right.
not, it's not my fault that they were assholes, but like, just cause I didn't, it's the way you pitch an idea too. I'd be like, oh, this yeah. isn't great, you guys, or this is just some thing that I was thinking about, but.
So it was more just like, confidence in the pitch and less just casual sexism.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. It's like confidence in your idea.
Yeah.
Because like, nobody knows, like you can't, I don't know. You can't just think what makes your idea shit. I don't know. I was like in a pitch meeting with two other women the other day, and we were all like, guys, I don't know. This is just like something stupid that I was thinking about. Mm-hmm. But like, if you observe men aren't like that in pitch meetings, and men think that their ideas are like,
no, yeah,
fucking amazing no matter what. And it's like, why don't I just strip that all away, strip out all the expectations I have on like my ideas, my creative stuff, and just like give the idea out and pretend like it's the best.
Yeah.
And then see what happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I always wonder when that like unearned confidence that like I'm supposed to have as like a straight right? white man is going to kick in.
Yeah.
Cause like that would be great. I yeah. would love to have some of that. And I see it in like pretty much everybody, but like, I've never felt that. And I'm just like, where's mine?
I feel like it's reference. Like the more you get used to something, the easier it is or whatever. But like, I've never had that honor. Like I can't go into an audition room and just be like overly confident or mm-hmm. like, I'm always like a little insecure. But when I was teaching, I would tell my students, especially the women, just get on stage and pretend like you have the biggest dick in the entire world.
Right.
Just pretend like your dick is so fucking big, and then they would be more confident. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. I just last week stumbled across something from like 2011 that was super embarrassing. Cause I was messaging other people who I've wanted to have on the show on Facebook, and I came across Jim Tews.
Mm-hmm.
And I had messaged him about something like way back in 2011 because he was looking to do like, you know, like production work and stuff. And I wrote him this like message about like, oh yeah, I'm working on this movie with Benga Akinabe from The Wire. And it, like, I could tell that it was just so like, look at this impressive thing I'm doing with somebody who's on a real TV
yeah,
show.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just so desperate and so just like, I just cringed, and I couldn't bring myself to actually send him a message for like another week. When I saw that, I was just like, oh my God, that's embarrassing. And I just closed out of the window and just walked away.
Oh my God. I think everybody has those. I like don't watch things, or like, yeah. I don't watch old shows, or I don't listen to my stuff. Like when you brought up my podcast, I was like, oh my God, I wouldn't, that's so embarrassing. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you still do it?
No,
no, it's more or less done.
It's very like, I don't know if you found this, but it was very emotionally draining for me. Like,
yeah, it yeah. can be.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. It just kind of fizzled out for me.
How many episodes did you do?
Maybe like 30 or so.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's that open-ended thing with podcasts where like they could just go on forever,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And it's before people were doing seasons. Like, you yeah. know what I mean? Like, I feel like seasons help a lot. So people were just doing them every week, and it was yeah. just too exhausting.
Yeah, I mean, I started off weekly, and I kind of yeah. stick to semi-weekly. But I'm probably going to have to like kind of slow the pace as I like run out of friends to talk to, basically.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's only so many people who I'm going to be able to like book on this, like, you know, fly by night podcast, but it's fine.
Everyone loves talking about themselves.
That's true.
The thing.
Yeah. I don't know. It could be a finite thing, or it could just go on endlessly.
Yeah.
One of my favorite podcasts, they've been doing it since 2006.
That's crazy.
It's insane.
Yeah, they're so different now. I think, like, if you have, like, a whole team and you're, like, writing them and researching them, and it can be, like, a thing. I was listening to the Story Pirates podcast today. It's so good.
Story Pirates.
Story Pirates are, they go into kids, they go into schools and they, kids write stories and then they perform the stories that kids write. And they're so dumb.
That sounds really cute.
And hilarious.
Yeah.
And a couple of my friends are on it, and it's a podcast for children, and it's,
oh wow,
so well done. Like, it's, there's a piano and,
yeah,
there's,
see,
like,
you need some
effects.
Sort of hook. You, yeah, need, like, I just started this because I mean, I kind of have a hook, which is, you know, it's failure and rejection and things like that, but it's by no means the first, like, interview show, or, you know,
yeah,
like, talk to comedians about dark stuff. Like, that's literally, that's Marc Maron, that's Mental Illness Happy Hour, but whatever, you know. But it doesn't, most of, like, a good deal of my favorite podcasts kind of aren't really anything. They're just, it's, totally, it's just idiots talking, and,
like, my favorite,
yeah, they're like them or you don't.
It's,
yeah,
probably my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a hook. That's a, you know, they read stuff, they,
but I
do,
like,
research.
It better when they're just talking. Like, I honestly, yeah, kind of zone out when they talk about the murders.
Yeah, I zone out. Like, I go in and out of that one, but
yeah,
I definitely like that one a lot. I love The Dollop. It's,
oh,
a,
yeah,
history podcast. Mm-hmm. It's so good. I love My Brother and Me.
Oh, I've never listened to that.
They're fucking awesome, and they, like, I just got obsessed with, they had this offshoot podcast called The Adventure Zone where they just played D&D with,
really,
their dad. And it started as, like, a goof, but it became, like, it turns out they're just really good at it. And it was, I don't know, it's amazing. It inspired me to start playing D&D.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
That's such a good premise. I don't feel like I talked about failure enough, because I wanted to.
Do you want to talk about failure,
yeah,
more? Let's talk about failure more.
So much.
Let's talk about it.
Think
about it in terms of, like, professional failures, personal failures.
Yeah, so,
and pick the juiciest ones out of that.
I think it's mostly professional. I think, like, for me, I've been auditioning for commercials, I always say 5 years, but it's more like 8, and I have never booked anything from an audition. So, like, and I probably audition 2 or 3 times a week.
Two or three times a week for 8 years.
Never,
nothing,
book anything. Never.
Wow.
Yeah.
National commercials, regional commercials,
national,
everything.
National, like, you know, like Geico, Verizon, like,
yeah,
big commercials. Never. Like, I've booked commercials where someone's directing and they're like, hey, can you be in this commercial?
So yeah.
I book a whiskey commercial. I booked a USPS commercial, like, that way, like, friends of friends. But
yeah,
from an audition, like, I don't want to discredit the success I have had, but, like, from audition perspective, nothing.
Nothing.
So, and still I, like, go in and try to, like, go for it. And it's really hard. It's really fucking hard. Because sometimes I'll be holding and, like, I'll get close, or I'll have a callback and I'll be like, I fucking killed it. And then I just won't get it. And it's like, it fucking sucks. And, like, yeah, it's stuff that can be, like, life-changing too. Like,
mm-hmm,
those Verizon commercials with Thomas Middleditch that play all the,
oh,
time,
yeah,
everywhere. Like, that could be so
could
much
been,
fucking
could have been
money.
You.
That
would have been,
yeah,
a lot of money.
Yeah, like that kind of thing. And, like, I used to put more weight on them when I had, like, more servicey jobs. When I had, like, service industry jobs, I'd be like, I just need to book a commercial and then I can get out of here.
Yeah.
And that was really depressing. But now...
But that's the thing, is, like, you can totally do one of those commercials and then, like, the
people,
next,
and
like,
people
6 months
around
later,
you do it all the time.
Yeah.
You,
yeah,
see people doing it all the time. And then, but, like, and I think it just seems like that. And when you break it down, they're booking maybe 1 or 2 big things a year or something like,
yeah,
that. But that's been really, really, really hard for me. Like, I've been working with my current agents for 2 years, never made them any money, not a dime.
Wow.
And bless their hearts for believing in me and sending me out 2 to 3 times a week. Like,
yeah,
they all, and that's, they're amazing for, like, seeing that and believing it. And I'm, like, so fortunate to work with them. But
yeah,
yeah, I feel so bad. I'm glad it's a big agency. I'm glad,
yeah,
it's not like a small mom and pop place that I'm not making them any money. Since it's a big place, like, they're making money. They're fine. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really hard.
Are there mom and pop, like literally mom and pop kind of?
Oh yeah, my husband's with a woman who it's just her, and then she has an assistant, and it's like her agency, and that's all she does.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And then she lives. I mean, they take like 20% commission. That's how she lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, like that's. I mean, that's just part of showbiz, right?
I know,
that's,
but like
the rejection is,
I keep thinking, like,
just relentless.
What's gonna give? This is the loop. It's like so much rejection for me. Like, I was up for a writing job at Comedy Central, like maybe last like April.
Yeah.
And my friend worked there, and my friend was hiring, like, my really good friend. Yeah. And my packet was solid, and I didn't get it, and I was like, oh, God, I've known this guy for years. Like, I still didn't get this fucking job. And then that was only the start of it. Last year, I submitted 12 writing packets, didn't get anything. And they were good fucking packets. And one job I got put on hold for, they like asked me my avails. They were like, are you available for these days to write for the show? And then I didn't get it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's heartbreaking. It's maddening.
Well, and it sucks because you're doing everything right. You're doing the work.
And I put everything into it. Yeah. Like, I make sure they're so good, and they still don't get it. And you can't just be like I submitted a packet a couple weeks ago. My grandmother passed away, and I had a packet due, and I was like, I could easily just be like, fuck this. Because, like, mm-hmm. You can easily be like, oh, I'm not going to get it anyway. Like, why should I fucking submit this? I'm going to Canada for a funeral. But I made myself push through it and do it anyway, and I didn't get the job.
Right.
It's insane. It's so fucking crazy. And like I'm in a situation at my work now where they're wanting me to do fewer auditions, and it's getting tougher and tougher to like dip out and go. But I can't just like, it would be so easy to be like, oh, I'm giving up. Like, fuck this. Like, yeah. It's been so long, but I can't, you know, I can't. Like, I've worked hard to get where I'm at. I don't know.
Those are, I mean, to me, so I have different categories that I like to, you know, like bins that I put failures in. And those, to me, those are like, I look at those and like, to me anyway, I'm like, well, that's not on you. Like, you did the work and you, it was somebody else's decision, right?
Yeah.
And then there's what I like to call like active failures. Could you think on
I got one.
Like, yeah.
Okay. Today I went to a major pilot audition for a network. I went in and I was like, "Hey guys, hi." And I wasn't looking, and they're like in the audition room, there was a step. I fucking tripped right over it.
Did you go all the way down?
I didn't go all the way down. And I was like, and it was so embarrassing because it was right when I walked in the room. And I was like, people do that all the time, right? And he was like, all the time. I was like, thank God. But that to me was like the most embarrassing. Like, that's like a controllable failure. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Right. When's the last time you've been like in trouble with somebody?
With a person. At. I feel like I'm that way now at work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, my boss is really on my ass. Cause I get it. Like, in order to like move ahead in advertising, they want you to put everything into it. And I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Like,
you got to save some of those points for Sue.
Yeah. Know? Well, like, this agency has been very good for like 3 or 4 years about like letting me nourish my art and do what I wanted. And I've really been grateful for that. But now they're kind of just like tightening the grip on me because mm-hmm. I'm trying to like take on more role. And I've just been like take on more responsibility. I've just been so stressed out. Yeah. I feel like I might get fired. I don't think I really will, but there's this like where people are like, this one supervisor is like checking up on me with another people to see if I was at the studio these times. And like, that hasn't happened to me in a long time. And it's really weird. It's really hard. Yeah. I'm definitely in trouble now.
Do you extrapolate ever on things like that, of like, if I mess this up, then this will happen and then it'll come back to me in this way?
No.
No?
I can't, like, I know, because I can't, like, because that gives me so much anxiety. Like, I definitely don't. I just try to get everything done. I try to like push forward and get everything done that I need to get done. But right. I've learned to try not to control the outcomes of things.
Yeah.
Like control situations. It's really hard though.
You're doing the work, you know? You're doing the work every day.
Yeah, I'm definitely in trouble at work. I just realized.
Are you just realizing you're
I mean, yeah, it's a complicated situation.
If you get fired tomorrow, like, you know, tell me, like, email me or whatever.
Yeah, I will. This will be great for your podcast.
It'll be a great follow-up.
I will be fucked, but it'll be great for your podcast.
It will be. Yeah.
I got fired in 2016. I forgot to tell you. So I was at this job that I'm at now, and I left to go to a parenting blog because I thought I'd be able to be more creative. They kind of like pitched it to me like that.
A parenting blog?
Yeah. They pitched it to me like I'd be able to do more creative writing and be funnier and blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't like that. And I was leaving for auditions, and they like sat and I was there maybe like 2 months, and the boss like slacked me in the morning and was like, hey, can I talk to you at the end of the day? And I was like, oh, this is it.
Yeah. You always know that that's what the...
I was like, oh, this is it. And then at the end of the day, he was like, yeah, I think the role has changed. We need someone who's like more into marketing and analytics. And that really like crushed me, because after that, I applied for more jobs. But like, if you don't really care in that industry, you're not going to get hired if you're not putting everything into it. So then I was like babysitting, and I was like, I'm like in my 30s, about to get married. I have no money, and I'm like babysitting.
Yeah.
Like, it was awful. It was so bad. So part of me, like, I don't want to lose the job I have now, because I don't ever want to go back to that financial insecurity. It was really hard. But who knows? I can't think about it.
Yeah.
Cause I will cry.
Right.
It's so stressful. I don't know.
Sue Smith, where can people find you if you want them to find your work?
Yeah, my website is suesmithcomedy.com, and my Twitter is suesmith666.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. That's a good way of dealing with like having kind of a common last name.
Thank you. Right?
It was either that or like Sue
420.
Sue Smith. Yeah, 6'9".
6'9", yeah.
420.
Like, what are you going to do? You got to do 666.
Yeah.
Avoid the conversation.
You have to. All right. Well, thank you very much for being on our show.
Thank you.
Our show. Me and Buddy, I guess.
It was a pleasure.
All right. Thanks once again to our guest, Sue Smith. If you would like to support our show, please rate and review us on iTunes, or visit patreon.com/selfworst to help us out financially. If you would like to reach me, I'm at selfworst@gmail.com. Thank you. I haven't been thanking him on the past few episodes, but thank you once again to Ali Jafar for writing our bumper music. And that's about it for me. Hope everybody's having a good week. Stick at it. You know, February can be, you know, almost as gross of a month as January, but we're going to get through it. Or not. Until next week, go out and fail. It's good for you.